Meet Sven. He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's May 22nd, 2009, and you're listening to the best poker podcast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And now I'm going to go sit in the corner and read my new book by Mike Mattis out, Check Raising the Devil, while you spew on and on about the Chicago meetup. I'll be back in 20 minutes. Have fun.
Oh, of course, you're mentioning that because Mike Mattis is going to be on next week's show.
Hopefully, yeah. So we're trying to get
Mike
him on the show next week. Yeah,
to talk about his new book. But since you brought up Chicago, I wasn't going to bring up Chicago.
Yeah, it's the first 6 pages of our notes today.
No, I'm back. I had a great time up in Chicago with the good folks at Main Event Charity Games and the Scott Long Poker Classic and the Ante Up Poker Challenge. 2 great tournaments.
Of which you were there for 1.
No, I was there for all of the Scott Long Poker Classic. I did not play in it, but I did present the trophy.
Sweet.
To the winner who I'm sure has no idea
who you are.
Who I am until now, but that's all right.
Well, I bet you picked up another listener because of that.
Yeah. No, but the cool thing was this was Chief O'Neill's on the north side and run by this great operation called Main Event Charity Games. And got to say, they're really impressed with how they ran it and everything. But when I walk in, I'd sent some magazines up ahead of time to Chicago Joe, who set this all up.
Yeah.
And everybody was reading them.
Awesome.
So that was cool.
That's really cool.
So, yeah. So I think there's a lot more people in Chicago that know who Ante Up is now.
That's awesome.
But, I had a good time. There was actually more than a handful of Ante Up Nationals that showed up, and a couple of them that we hadn't met before, but and some veterans of the last time I was up there, Brian and Mike, and good old Chicago Joe. And man, I know we've said this on the show before, but that guy doesn't need any sugar in his diet. He is just going 24/7. And everybody I talked to up there just raved about Chicago Joe and what he does for poker, what he does for the city of Chicago, and obviously what he does for Ante Up. He's just a great cheerleader for everybody. So it was good to hang out with him. And again, thanks for him for setting all that stuff up. And, I gave the trophies away. Actually, I stayed at the end of the night tournament, too, to give the trophy away.
Uh-huh.
And also gave away cool new Ante Up patches.
Yes.
Those little, self-adhesive ones that you could stick on your clothing and you look like a pro, right?
Yep.
And, of course, coming up June 1st, everybody in the Ante Up Nation can get their hands on one for a low, low price. Yet to be determined. But you have to sign up for our free e-newsletter at anteupmagazine.com/subscribe.
You sound like one of those infomercials.
To unlock the code as to how to get one of these patches for a very cheap price.
So, you like that ShamWow guy who's got the headset on,
Yeah, except I don't get in trouble with the law. But a couple quick stories, because I know you always like to hear stories from when I come back.
Okay, now I'll go over there and read the book.
So first of all, we played the night tournament and the Ante Up Poker Challenge, and had a real tough first table, survived that somehow, and got moved to another table. You know when you move to a table, this is a tip that Greg Raymer taught me up at the WSOP Academy. It's kind of common sense, but sometimes people forget. When you sit down at a table, the first thing you want to do is look around the table and take stock of all the chip stacks. So you know who's got the big chip stacks and the people you want to avoid and stuff like that. So I sit down, I notice in seat 1, there's a guy that has every chip ever made in the world sitting in front of him. So it took me not more than 2 hands before I saw all the eye rolling going on at the table to realize that this guy really had zero clue how to play poker, and was hitting everything.
Man. It's always like that, though, isn't it, when you're in a tournament like that? It's always one guy, you can't explain it. You can't explain how this guy is winning these hands, calling these all-ins with the best hand when he's got jack-deuce. How do they do it? I don't know how they do it, but unbelievable.
Well, and I tell you, I ended up going out to this guy, of course.
Oh!
You know, I made a move on him when he actually had a real hand. He didn't have to suck out on anybody. But, you know, I wonder, how do you... Or do you even combat a player like this?
It's inevitable that you're just either going to lose to him, or you got to have a monster hand to play against him, because then you're going to punish him for being a donk, you know? Jeez. Yeah, I mean, a lot of times you lick your chops because you're thinking, oh, there's an idiot here, I'm going to get all the money. And then inevitably it always happens. You get in with jacks and they got aces or something. You know, it just always ends up happening that way.
And even worse is he was right to my left. I mean, you couldn't raise with any kind of... I mean, you couldn't kind of bluff raise because you knew he was probably going to call. And so you essentially had to wait for a good hand.
Yeah.
And, of course, I didn't have that luxury, so boom. Also, you know, I walked in, and you never know what you're going to see in these temporary kind of poker rooms. You know, we have a lot of great bar leagues here in Florida, and they have different levels of equipment.
Right.
But I walked in, I got to tell you, I was completely impressed with all the equipment. The tables were really nice. And they had on the tables, they had automatic shufflers, Chris.
Sweet. Are you kidding me?
They were. And they're made by this company, Shuffle Tech, up in Chicago, too. And they're really made for the home market. I think they're like $500 or something, $600 if you want to actually set it into your table like
this. Right, right.
But I was impressed. They worked just as well as those super high, impressive, expensive ones that...
That's top notch, man. Yeah. Chicago, they do it right up there.
I tell you, man.
Except for the pizza. They don't do the pizza.
Oh, come on. My wife's going to kill you. Well, she's already going to kill you. But now she's going to. Now she probably has a justifiable reason.
Oh,
to.
Man.
All right. Now, you know, one of the great things about in a poker room is fights.
Yeah.
You know, every once in a while you get a fight.
You can't win with class. You can't lose with class.
That's clearly a classic one.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm in the middle of a tournament, and all of a sudden. Lots of screaming from a pretty young lady over at the cash game table.
Okay.
Or I guess it was a sit-and-go table, right? And, of course, Chicago Joe's right there. He's in the middle of everything, all right? So this lady is just screaming for, like, a half an hour and demanding her money back and blah, 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 blah. And, of course, we're all in the tournament trying to win $1,500 here, so none of us want to go over and find out what's going on.
Yeah.
So at the break, I'm like, Joe. What the heck was going on over there? So it turns out that this this young lady had just graduated from law school, all right? So apparently some semblance of intelligence going on there, right? And apparently she had taken a cell phone call.
Oh, no.
In the middle of a hand.
Oh, no, you can't do that.
All right, she hadn't looked at her hand yet, but the dealer, and this is how professional these things are run. They, you know, they killed the hand. They said, you know, you can't. And she went livid.
Oh, my God.
She's like, you gotta be kidding me. I didn't know that was a rule. And, you know, they had to explain why, you know, it doesn't matter if you don't know it's a rule.
Right.
And, you know, it's standard everywhere. Demanded her money back. But, I mean, I've never seen
demanded anything. Demanded her money back.
Flip out. And she ended up getting it back. I mean, it was probably the best thing to do, which kind of really sucks.
Oh, man. They gave her money back?
You hate.
See, they killed one hand.
I know. But then they did a high card at the cash table, and one of Chicago Brian's friends got the high card, went in the tournament, and took second.
Oh, wow.
So, silver lining. But, man.
Well, that's what she gets, because she sat in that seat. She probably would have taken second, so screw her.
And, you know, I don't like to pick on lawyers, because, you know, obviously we need lawyers as in the business and stuff. And there's some lawyers that came out that play with us, too. But, you know, she was doing this legal stuff, like, you know, I'm going to report you to the state, and where is it in writing? And blah, blah, blah.
Oh, my God.
Calm down, lady.
You had a hand killed. Oh, my God.
I know. It was one
of them. Hey, Scott, you know what's worse than a busload of lawyers going off a cliff?
A busload of poker magazine publishers going off a cliff?
An empty seat.
Oh!
All right, this is my non-poker thought of the day.
We will never find another lawyer to represent us ever again.
Yeah, because the lawyers of America are really tuning in to our show. That's all they do as they're sitting there looking for precedents in their library, sitting around listening to Annie Up.
All right, and the final story from Chicago, too. You know, they also dealt cash games there, which is great. And a couple of the Annie Up Nationals, like Brian, didn't want to buck up for the tournament. So
right.
We're hoping for a good limit game to break out. Well, of course, just like everywhere in America... No Limit games break out. It's all No Limit up there. But at some point, I saw him actually sitting down and getting chips. I'm like, what's going on? So he comes over and he's like, Scott, when you're out, we're playing Chinese poker. I'm like, Chinese poker?
Oh, my God.
And the best part of it is I had the dealer at my tournament table was Chinese. And he looked at me, he's like, what's Chinese poker? And I looked at him like he was crazy, and I wanted to explain it, and then he starts laughing. He's like, I know what Chinese poker is. I'm like, oh!
Psych.
Wow. So, you know, I finally, when I got booted out of the tournament, I made it to the final two tables, didn't cash. But I go over there, and I sat down, and we played Chinese poker all night. Brian and me, a couple other guys, were running the whole room, were playing too.
Cool.
And we played the rest of the night. Played a dollar point, and then finally someone got a little greedy and wanted to go $2 a point, and that's when I kicked it into high Mandarin gear and took some cash out of that game.
Did Jean-Robert Ballon there help you translate that Mandarin gear that you kicked it into? So let me ask you, you did well in this game, in this Chinese poker game?
I did very well.
So that can only tell me that the other guys sucked at it. Because you're terrible at Chinese poker. I've played Chinese poker with you, and you're terrible. So they must have been really bad. They must not have known how to play. Were they doing stuff like putting a better hand above another hand, and they had to sacrifice all their... Were they that bad that made you win?
There were a couple people that misset their hands.
Yeah,
that's brutal, especially when you're playing for scoops.
Oh, my God.
But, no, you know, it's like a low margin game, I like to call it. I mean, you gotta set your hands just right.
No, I know.
There's some strategy. So
there's definitely strategy.
You know, I was talking to Brian, and he kind of laughed, and he's like, you know, hey, when are you gonna have a Chinese poker hand of the week? And I'm like, I pause for a minute. And I'm like, that ought to be interesting. So anyhow, Brian called to the hotline to kind of give us a preview of what a Chinese poker hand of the week might sound like.
This is Brian calling in a hand of the week from Chicago for people at the table, two regulars and two ante-uppers. Your second act, your hand is in a Chinese poker, two of clubs, ten of hearts, four of spades, six of clubs, five of diamonds, nine of clubs, eight of hearts, six of spades, eight of spades, seven of hearts, two of hearts, nine of hearts. So looks like there's some straight possibilities, a bunch of pairs, and some flush. So let us know how you do it. I'm just kidding. Actually, I really enjoyed the Chinese poker with the Ante-Up Nation and the meetup here in Chicago. And I hope your trip back went well, and next time we'll get even more anti uppers out there.
Oh, that's pretty damn funny.
Yeah, we're going to need lots of pens to keep track of all those cards.
Oh, my God. You got a six of hearts, you got an eight of hearts, you got a queen. I mean, literally, you could spend all day on that hand. You could do a whole show on Chinese poker hand, literally.
Yeah. Well, you take all day setting your hand, too. We had to call the clock on a couple guys. We're like, come on! It's three hands. Figure it out.
So that's cool. You had a good show. You came back. Did you get drunk, too?
I did not. I enjoyed some adult beverages, but I was responsible.
I saw you like going on and on and on about some sort of scotch that you
loved or something. Actually, I had a little hit off of Mike, our apparently now former lawyer friend up there after you insulted all of them on the show. But I had a little hit off of his, and that was pretty good. But I did not have any more. I should have. I just, you know.
Man, I'm so disappointed in you.
I know. I had some beers, and, you know, but this wasn't the mood, so.
All right. Well, I'm glad you're back.
Well, you know, and I had a lot of time to think on the plane back and forth, and this was kind of an issue that came up on Poker Soup last week when I made
What's
a guest
that?
Appearance on that. It's you know.
I have no idea what that is.
Yeah, yeah.
Poker Soup, is that like a TV show?
Maybe. Yeah,
I don't
like
know
that.
What that is.
Yeah. I just clicked on a Poker Soup button and I started talking to people,
okay.
So I don't really know what it is. You know, we talked a lot about Annie Duke on the Celebrity Apprentice lately and some of her antics on the show, right?
Yeah.
And then just this week, an old Annie Up listener, I don't know if he still listens to him or not, but he was a kind of an up-and-coming kind of campaign consultant here in the local area before he hit some rough times and had an arrest and... He left for a couple years, came back, got a second chance, and then he just got fired again this week. All right, in the newspaper, our former employer, all the times that they've written stories about this guy, never mentioned that he plays poker until now, when he got fired, and they're like, a professional poker player, in parentheses. All right, so I'm like, that seems kind of unfair to us poker players, right?
Yeah.
To all of a sudden just bring up something like that, you know, are you going to be... Well, you know, if he, like, you know, raised alpacas. Are they going to put that in the story? No, it just seems like an easy thing to throw in there when you're talking about somebody who's on tough times, right?
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, should we be worried about what people think of poker players these days, particularly in the light of now we're kind of on this cusp of, you know, finally getting through the legislatures in a lot of states and then hopefully getting this online thing through Congress? Should there be some kind of PR campaign to let the world know that we're all happy, cheery people and not these degenerate gamblers that people think we are?
Is that essentially, though, what the PPA is trying to do? I mean, I think that they...
Well, I don't know. Are they?
I think they are.
I mean, I think it's probably part of it, but I mean, I wonder... they're obviously having a lot of success getting legislation moving,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know whether they're really having a lot of success in changing this persona of a poker player that non-poker players have of us.
Well, I think they're targeting the right people, though. They're targeting people who can make the decisions for us, and they don't really care about the general public. That's how it feels to me. I mean, I know they care about the general public, but they want the general public behind them to show this mass sort of movement so that Congress will respect it, but they're really just getting poker players to speak up, not actual, you know, card-carrying Americans who don't play. So, I don't know. I think that's interesting that they threw that little line in there about that kid Peter, so... We met him before, didn't we?
Yeah,
he was at the one of the charity.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I agree with you. I think that, they threw that in there because, you know, the Andy Duke thing or because of the economy. And no, I agree. I don't know who would do that, though. Who would take on that project of giving positive PR for poker people for no reason? I mean, you know what I mean? So the PPA has got to be the one that I think they already are established. They already are looking for Americans to get behind them. And they would be the ones that maybe they should start having sort of this positive campaign for it. I agree. I think that, you know, poker players have come a long way, though. You know, there used to be a time where you read this all the time. You read it in, in our magazine this month, in our June issue with Barbara Enright, the Hall of Famer. We have a Q&A with her. And she says that when she was younger and she was raising her kid,
right,
she would scoot off to, you know, to the card rooms and not tell anyone and then come home, pick up her kid, and then no one would ever know. But now people look at it with amazement, and they want to know all about it. So I think it's come a long way, but there's still some of that seediness that people think is attached to it. And, yeah, I think that, don't watch movies like The Grand, you know, and California Split. But really, I agree with you, though. I think that I wish there was something out there to help people understand that it's just a skill and we're just normal people loving the game of poker just like any other game that people love, you know?
Yeah, I've had a couple reporters call and interview me lately about the new Florida laws, and, you know, I always try to do that, too. I mean, like, I like to tell them that, you know, the poker players in Florida are doctors, they're lawyers, they're teachers, they're mechanics, they're your neighbors.
Yep, exactly.
So maybe we need one of those little NBC More You Know kind of spots with, like, you know, the stars flying across.
Poker players are just like you and me. They may keep strange hours, but that doesn't make them vampires. The more you know.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Cut it. First take.
They can take that
first
take. And I totally did that off the cut, too, man. Here, NBC, here you go. So,
yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to tell you that, you know that rival website of ours?
I'm aware of it.
Used to be one of our favorite sites.
Right, exactly.
Well, anyway, Full Tilt... has this new thing now for their play money people.
Okay.
My wife likes to play like sit and goes a lot, and she likes to play for play money because she doesn't really care about putting real money online. But now she has done it. There was this time where she was playing sit and go, and she won it, and like she normally does. She wins a lot of these sit and goes, whether they're money or not. And so one day she's playing, and this message pops up on her screen. And it says, "Congratulations from Full Tilt Poker. You finished in first place. If this had been a $5 sit and go, you would have won $22.50. Click below to find out how to make your first deposit for as little as $10 and start playing today." And I thought, wow. You know, what, did you really think that the people playing online don't know? You know, I mean,
it's kind of reinforcing.
I don't know.
If you're this good at the play money, why don't you step up and make some real money?
Wow, it seemed like a sort of a desperation thing to me. I don't know. I mean, I guess, but yeah, I was shocked by that. You know, I'd never heard of anything like that. You know, it's sort of like blocking the pop-ups with your computer.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You wish you could block something like that. You know, it's like unsolicited you know, advertising that you're not at, you know. But,
but, you know, here's the thing. You could tell your wife she probably will not get any more of these messages if she was playing for money.
Right, and now
she's like, hey, if you were playing in a play tournament, you would have won 1,500 play money chips.
Well, here's
click
what happened.
Click here to find out how you could play for not money.
If you were playing for nobody, you would have no money. But what happened was Full Tilt said, here, we want to give you some money for not playing on our site for a while, so here's the free bonus that you can have, and if you get it, you know, all you got to do is play one money hand. So I took the money, and then I played one hand, got the money, then transferred it to my wife's account so she could play on there.
Oh, okay.
You know, so my wife's playing for money so she can avoid those messages, you know. But I just thought it was interesting. I don't think Stars has done that or any of the other sites. I've never heard of that, but... wow. It seemed like begging to me, to be honest. I don't know. That's just how I felt.
It'd be great if they had like a little can. You know, so,
a little can to wrinkle it.
Or the message came up like on a handwritten cardboard sign or something.
What if? We drove in today. There's a guy out there with an American flag on his shirt. And he had a sign that said, what if? He wasn't asking for money. He wasn't pretending to be homeless. He just had a sign that said, what if? I don't know what that meant, but I figured he ran out of room on the cardboard thing. I don't know. All right, well, let's move on to your... very famous Andy Up News Desk.
Is it really that famous?
It's growing.
Wow, all right. Very good. Yeah. All right, let's see if I can not screw it up then, if I'm going to be famous. All right, the Court of Appeal in Gothenburg, Sweden, has declared that poker tournaments in the country are generally legal, according to Radio Sweden. The ruling, likely to be challenged by state-run casinos, may mean that private tournaments can again be run. So apparently in Sweden, only the state-run casinos can run these. There's a couple people that challenge that, and this particular court sided with them.
Way to go, Sweden.
Unless Andy Up is invested in a state-run Sweden company. Two poker players have sued Los Angeles area poker rooms, claiming their rooms are violating a 2005 legal advisory that says players must be eligible to win Bad Beat jackpots without making a purchase, according to the Los Angeles Times. The rooms say the suit is without merit because players can request to play at tables that don't take a dollar for the jackpot fund.
Who's right, Scott?
Well, you know, it sounds like the rooms really are going to win this. I mean, this is a weird thing that I didn't realize that until reading this is that, you know, this legal advisory was, you know, hey, Bad Beat jackpots are just like lotteries or these games like the Monopoly at McDonald's, and you have to be able to offer people a way to win without paying.
But you can't play in the Florida lottery without paying. You can't have a ticket for the six numbers that come up in the Powerball or whatever without paying for that ticket. So
yeah,
I'm not going to wake up one day and have
maybe
them call.
Different.
Yeah, see, it's got to be something sweepstakes because it can't be like the lotteries. Because, you know, the Florida Lottery is not going to call me up tomorrow and say, you won the Powerball. You didn't even play. Remember, you can't win if you don't play.
Yeah,
that's the whole, you know. So I think the card rooms are going to win this easily.
Yeah, yeah. You know? But it's nice to know that you can walk in there and say, hey, give me a jackpot fun free table where I can still win the jackpot.
Yeah.
I'm going to be doing that when I go to L.A.
That is awesome.
All right, the World Series of Golf has reached an agreement with the WGN Network to air the 13-episode season of the contest that adds elements of poker to professional golf. You watched this last year, right?
I watched it last year and the year before. I enjoyed it because a lot of the poker players are playing in it,
right.
You know, because they had high stakes and the format was interesting. I don't know if they're going to be back. I mean, 13 episodes, but that's a lot of episodes. I want it to happen.
Well,
like,
it's not even an episode per hole, though, right?
So combine
the par threes with the par fours.
You're going to do a whole hour show on one hole. It only takes them 10 minutes to play it, but they're going to, you know, I don't know. I mean, I like this thing to last a weekend, you know, watch it one day or 2 days.
Special events.
Not 13 episodes, but I liked watching it because you saw Doyle out there and you saw Ivy and Negreanu and our buddy Dewey Tomko. So,
yeah.
That was kind of cool, you know. I mean, I guess we're really desperate for news to have it on the show today, but I enjoyed it.
That's not true. I held news items to get that in.
Wow.
All right, finally, TMZ reports that Gambling Times Incorporated has sued Scott Lazar, the professional poker player who was executive producer of the movie Deal, because the company says a product placement that it paid $50,000 for it never appeared in the movie. TMZ also says the movie only made $78,000, but the suit seeks damages of $1 million.
I'm shocked that it made 78 grand. I thought it would have been a loser. That movie sucked.
I thought that was going to be on your top list of top five movies.
Yeah, no, it'll be on my five worst list when we do that in a few months. But wow, that's shocking. Scott Lazar, I remember him too from the World
Series. Yeah, he seemed like a nice guy, but you know, apparently didn't make a very good movie. But you know, here's what I wonder. You know, if I wonder if the guy's happy that his product You shouldn't be happy yeah. this product wasn't in a
I
movie.
I know, exactly. You want to be in a movie that's bombed?
I mean, what's he going to do? Make a deal, too?
Well, here's the thing, Scott.
In the movie so he can get his product from
Here's the thing. He wanted the product in there so he could sue for $2 million. Because it'd be more damage. That's what happened there. All right, well, you were laughing and laughing so loud, I couldn't hear the hotline. Now we got them all built up here, but we're only going to play one. So remember, the phone number is 813-448-1120. If you call us and we use it, we'll give you something. But this one's interesting because we've kind of talked about this before. It deals with bar leagues and cash games, things like that. So let's listen.
Hey, guys, how are you doing? Just want to let you know I've been listening to your podcast here lately. Giving me a lot of tips. I mainly am a bar league player, although I have played here locally at Carver's here in Jacksonville, and so far I'm 4 out of 5 of tournaments up there. My main thing is playing in the free bar league tournaments and playing in the other tournaments. There's a lot of differentiation in the way the hands are played. I usually try to play by the book, but I'm getting sick of being ran down in the poker leagues with the best hand, and at times me trying to make a move but still getting ran out on. I was curious as to when do you decide to stop playing those leagues and maybe just play cash games?
Well, you know, I think that you and I played in bar leagues while we were still playing in regular things too, right? We were just because we wanted to go to Treasure Island, and we were bored one afternoon. It was just me and you. And we were tired of playing heads up, so we went down and played in one. Then we liked it, or whatever. We heard about it, and you know, so we played in them. But we were already playing, you know, our cash games, our home game, and things like that, and then in the casinos. But it's a good question. When do you want to move on? See, I think of the bar leagues and the free leagues as entertainment, and then honing your skills, but mostly entertainment. You know, that, you know, especially in the economy the way it is, some people think, you know, I can't afford to spend any money today, but I want to play poker. I think there comes a time when you're just tired of people saying, well, it's not costing me anything, so I can call you down to the end. And you know you're better than these players. You just know it. And that's the time to move on. You can just feel it. You can feel it in your heart or, you know, in your results.
Well, yeah, I think this guy actually answered his own question. I mean, if you get to the point where you're just frustrated with the play in the bar leagues, that's when it's time to step up and go to the next level.
I agree. And I think that's it. It's the frustration that once you're frustrated by the level of play because you know it's clearly inferior, then it's time to try your hand at playing for money, whether it's online or in a poker room.
All right. Well, let's spin that great swag wheel and see what our friend from Jacksonville wins.
Okay.
Hey. Well,
what?
Where's the swag wheel?
I thought you brought it.
No, you always bring it.
Isn't I know, but
is it in your backpack?
No. I thought you had it last.
No. Wait a minute. You remember that guy in the front of the radio station when we came in today?
Yeah.
He looked a lot like Gambit with one of those fake mustaches.
It was like a Salvador Dali mustache that he got.
He asked to look at the wheel. I think he stole it.
You let him have it out of my bag?
Well, you know, I was just being a nice guy, you know. Swag wheel is kind of a signature thing. People like to look at it and touch it and feel it.
What are we going to do?
Can't believe someone stole our swag wheel like that.
Oh,
I bet it's one of those fraternity pranks. I thought it was Gambit.
Like stealing the mascot?
Yeah, all right. Well, let's see. It seems like those Texas Hold'em strategy cards seem to come up a lot. Or maybe one of those poker faces. Maybe there's something around here in the studio.
Poker's Most Wanted.
Hey, wait a minute. Look at these. Chris, have you seen these Jägermeister bottle opener keychains?
Those are cool.
They're the shape of sharks.
Like a card shark.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, we're doing it all right here.
You know, this guy's going to move up from the bar leagues. You know, so this is great because he can pop open his... bottle of Jaeger? No, you can't do any of that.
No. But
you could use this for...
See, now, if he stays in the bar leagues, they'll bring him the bottle and he can open it up. But, you know, if he goes to a card room, they'll probably have the bottle open for him.
Yeah, that's true.
So he may have to stay at the Barley Store a couple more weeks just to enjoy his keychain. Because we're signing on these keychains.
All right, so that's what we're going to send you. Sorry we couldn't spin the wheel. We'll put an APB out on that wheel. But send us your address, and we'll get these shark bottle opener keychains from Jägermeister.
Well, you know, we still have two more items to give away today. I can't imagine what's going to happen.
Show, isn't it? All right.
All right, well, we'll open up our mailbag now. And this is from David, who lives in Harrisburg. He wants to know why we keep using these micro-limit hands for our hand of the week. He says basically, you know, I believe, especially after last week's show, he said, that the hands of the week should come from games played above 25 cent, 50 cent, which totally rules out any hand I play because I don't play above that anymore. But he said hearing the hands from these limits is really uninteresting and are often so grossly misplayed.
I think you add a little extra emphasis there. His only emphasis was on the above.
Oh, yeah, okay. Sorry.
Here's the thing, David from Harrisburg. I tend to agree with you. But we also have to understand that a lot of our listeners, these are kind of like the limits they play in. So these are the hands that they are playing. And, you know, even if it's out of the realm for a lot of listeners, I mean, you got to figure out how to play the limit that you're at. So, you know, that's why we'll have a couple on like that. But, you know, also it also depends on the quality of the hands that we get sent in. So, you know, the best way to change whether we have micro-limit hands on the show is to start sending bigger-level hands to us at podcast@aniamagazine.com.
Yeah, and
that's,
you know,
what you need to do.
That's true. And the other thing, too, is some people will send in tournament hands. So then you don't know.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
so if you want to send in tournament hands, and don't tell us the buy-in, just tell us the tournament hands, and we'll go from there, and then you'll have no idea what level it was at, and we won't tell you. But we do have a hand of the week that's going to blow him away.
Exactly.
And I guarantee that the limits in this hand are higher than any limit he's played.
I don't want to guarantee that.
No, I don't want to guarantee. But they're pretty good limits.
But they're much bigger than 2 cents.
Which is my comfort zone right there. 1 cent, 2 cent on stars, man. I kill those games. I'm a micro-limit specialist.
All right, so David, stick around to the end of the show. Hear that big money hand of the week. But for right now, we will spin the swag. Oh, man. Can we, like, just ruffle some pens here or something to make it sound like we're spinning?
Oh, you know what? I could take 2 pens and do a drum roll.
Want to
do a drum roll?
All right,
here we go.
Very nice, very nice. Well played. All right, Dave, the random
drummer
on the table has landed on a set of Texas Hold'em strategy cards from greatpokerhand.com. Send us your address, and we'll get that swag out to you right away.
All right, now this is the moment of the week where we go to the one-minute mystery.
Right.
And we're going to conclude on one-minute mystery this week because we played part one last week. But, you know, there's been some rumblings about how the Annie brass has been treating the one-minute mystery. And we need to discuss it today, I think. I think we need to talk about it a little bit before we go into the whole segment. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's some production issues that we don't need to get into. But philosophically, I think we've always thought of the one-minute mystery as kind of like the fan segment.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So we put out Columbo does this great mystery every week. We put it out there. And then we kind of let the fans kind of noodle over it for a week before we kind of influence their opinions on it, right?
Yeah, we've always done that. We've always thought, you know, we'll listen to it and say a couple of things occasionally. Sometimes we won't say anything at all. But we really don't want to sway anyone. We want you to try to solve the mystery on your own. What's going on here? What's happening? And if we say, you know, here's what we think, that's going to be in your head, and you're going to go off of that now instead of, you know what I mean? I mean, there's times where obviously people...
because you're going to think,
I'm
folding. The opposite of what I'm doing. Because,
yeah.
You know, I don't believe what Chris and Scott are saying.
Exactly. Here's the thing, though, is I just think that, I don't know, maybe we should hear from the Annie Up Nation, and they should tell us what they would prefer. Would they prefer us to break it down every week and then spoil it for them? Or, you know, I mean, we post it on the forum, too, at AnnieUpMagazine.com/forum. It's got its own little category, so everybody could weigh in there if they want about what's going on in this thing. But, you know, if you want us to just break it down for you every week, we could do that pretty much as long as we have the one-minute mystery on time and, you know, the detective's not on vacation or something. But we always thought that you guys wanted to do it on your own. But some people are saying that we should do like the old Lord Admiral did and have this sort of roundtable discussion. Of course, we wouldn't have a heads-up table because it's just me and you. But... You know, because we don't have enough people in the studio to talk about
maybe
the hand that way.
Bring a PokerStars monkey in or something.
Please don't bring the monkey in. I just got the feces out of my clothes. But I don't know. What do you think? You think that we should see what they have to say?
We'll just go to the forum and have people post there what they think.
And then we'll go
from America. We'll be democratic.
Yeah. But right now, let's listen to part one again from last week, and then we'll talk a little bit about it.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery. The Case of the Dancing Tens. It's the middle of a no-limit multi-table tournament, and the level is 150-300, and the antes have just kicked in at 25. Our stack size is 6,500, which is just shy of average, but our M is only 10. The under the gun folds, and the under the gun plus one, a player with 8,500 in chips, makes it 1,275 to go. The MP on our right folds, and it comes around to me with 10-10.
Now that's a pleasant surprise.
I pause to think about this for a moment. I'm in mid-position with five players still the act, although the small blind is timed out, so let's say four. The table is tightened up, and I don't see players coming along for odds at this point, so I'm going to get adventuresome and decide to call instead of raise. The rest of the players play nicey-nice and fold, and we are heads up when we see a flop of jack of clubs, four of clubs, four of diamonds.
I don't think he's in a rush.
Our opponent pauses for a moment, then c-bets 1,200 into the pot of 3,200. So, what are you going to do?
Okay, now this is a type of flop when you have a pair like this. That's a good flop for you.
Right, because you have a pair on board.
It's a pair on board.
Pre-flop raiser before us, the four probably isn't in his range.
Yeah, I mean, the jack.
The jack is the only
could have been an ace-jack, could have been jack-10 if he was getting out of line. I guess the only thing you're really worried about then are queens, kings, and aces, which is you're kind of cooler there if that's what happens. But I like this flop for our hand, and the guy bets out into us, so I'm thinking I'm raising at least here. We had 6,500 to start, and there's 12, so there's like almost three grand out there, and then he bet out. So I mean, I would probably shove. I would either shove or I would min raise to just scare the hell out of the guy. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm too weak of a player to shove, which is probably the right thing to do. So I probably would have just done a little wussy little min raise.
Well, that's not a wussy move. I mean, it's an interesting move. You can maybe still get away from your hand at that point. Maybe.
Interesting is usually a code word for completely ridiculous.
Wussy.
But that's the nicest thing I could say about it.
All right, well, let's listen to part two.
Welcome back. Well, you can read what you want into his action. I think it's a waste of time. I called off 20% of my chips to see a flop, and other than my opponent's flopping a monster, I really got what I hoped for. A flop that probably missed him. I avoided a race in favor of a stop and go, and this is a perfect flop for it. Regardless of his bet, I am getting any money in here on this flop. If I don't, my call was terrible.
You knew that was coming.
I ship it in and he goes in the tank. A good sign. Maybe ace-king? After quite some time, he calls, and indeed shows, ace-king.
I hope you don't take this too personally, sir, but...
The turn is a five of clubs, the river is six of hearts, and we win the hand. Until next time, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, celebrating 5 years of blog posts.
See, Columbo, he carries a gun, so you know he's not a wuss.
There's no
he shoves.
No wuss. And you can't spell Columbo with wuss, because there's no wuss in Columbo.
Oh, my God. But he clearly picked up on this guy, probably just had two overs, and let it fly, and the guy called him, which is kind of interesting.
It's a little scary. Still got to dodge six
outs twice.
Right.
He did right. He did what he was supposed to do, and he solved the mystery himself. He knew. He even says it in the clip. He's like, ace king, and then of course it is ace king. So, all right, well, that's another mystery. We liked it, we enjoyed it, and we hope you did too. But now we want to see what you think about. We screw things up all the time, so maybe you don't want us to do anything. Maybe we just keep doing a status quo, you know.
Remember, Sven, our friendly PokerStars Porsche dealer. Sven's still very excited.
Yeah.
He already knows that PokerStars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our PokerStars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
All right, Chris, I'm stoked. Stoked! With a capital S and a T and a K and whatever letters are in stoked. About the next Apes event, 8-game mixed.
Yes.
Free roll is this Wednesday coming up, May 27th. The actual tournament is June 10th, not June 5th, like some idiot last week said on the show.
You are correct, sir.
But and it's going to be a 10+1, so the free roll is going to be a little higher stakes because there's not going to be as many free seats.
Yeah, that's true.
In it,
that's
so
true. It'll be like 15 seats.
And you know, last night a couple of members, or this week a couple of members of the nation got together and we played a little 8-game practice.
Uh-huh.
And I'm glad it did, because I played these when I first signed on the Stars, and I've gotten away from them. And today in our power tips, we're really going to delve into deuce to seven triple draw low ball, which is the first rotation of this game, and certainly one that we haven't talked about a lot on the show. But real quickly, in the 8-game mix, one of the big things I think that I realized last night playing is there's a huge difference between limit and no limit. So those first six rotations are all limit, and then all of a sudden it switches to no limit.
Did you
followed by pot limit?
Did you major in stating the obvious
in
college?
I did.
Okay, good.
And I got a C.
No, you're absolutely right. And it's a weird transition to go from limit to no limit to pot limit like that.
Yeah, and I built up a nice stack limit, and then I was kind of a little timid when I got the no limit. I didn't want to give all those chips back on a bad beat.
Yeah,
you know. An all-limit tournament, you don't have to worry about that so much. But
right. No, you're absolutely
But it really
right.
does test all your skills. So
yeah, absolutely.
Really
and you need, you need to be aware of what game you're playing. And really, you know, a lot of people just, they get to limit and pot limit. And I mean, no limit and pot limit, and they crumble.
Yeah.
You know, because they're so used to that mode of, oh, it's only one more bet, whatever. And all of a sudden, boom, you're playing for your whole stack. And, you know it's pretty scary. But today we're going to focus on deuce of seven.
That's right.
Because pretty much all the other games will have delved into at some point during the Ape series.
Yeah, and
deuce to seven is not in the Ape series.
Right, the rotation is deuce to seven, then the 5 horse games in order: limit, hold'em, Omaha 8 limit, Raz limit, stud high, low limit, and then it goes to no limit, hold'em, and then pot limit, Omaha. So that's kind of the rotation. But the very first game you're going to play,
yep,
deuce to seven triple draw low ball.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah,
but it's a fun game to play, and it's easier than Badoogie. Had to throw that in there.
It was for me this week when I was playing.
But we'll start off with power tips. So I'll start off with mine.
Yep, because you're better at this game.
It's the most famous of all deuce to seven tips. I prefaced it by calling it deuces never loses. So really, if you're serious about this game and about winning in it, you really can't leave the gate without a deuce in your hand. It's all powerful, kind of like the ace trump card when you're playing setback, or you know, like the immunity idol. You really need this card. It's pretty powerful. I mean, it really does it separates the good players from the bad ones, you know. And the thing about the deuce is it helps you avoid straights. It makes sure that if you make the seven, you're probably going to make one of the best sevens, or if you're making eight, you're going to make a good eight because you got the deuce. I mean, it's such a powerful card that you really, and then the more deuces in your hand to start, the better, because you know they're not making a monster hand either. So the deuce is key. You need a deuce. Can I say that enough today?
What is that?
Stress it. A deuce. A number two. The card with two pips on it.
Now, are there in the games that you played, have there been deuces hidden in tree mail?
No, but I've been blindsided by a few deuces in the past.
Okay, very good. Very good.
You know, I've been blindsided by guys who don't play with a deuce and are raising with a three. And I'm like, what are you doing, Faso? And then, you know, or you. And then, you know, but no, deuce is real important.
All right, my first tip, position is huge. And, of course, you just conferred on me a master's degree in stating the obvious. So I will run with that academic achievement in saying, because, you know, in almost every game you hear this, a position is critical. But I really can't think of a game where position plays as big of a role as it does in deuce to seven. There's no exposed cards in this game. So the only information you get on your opponent's hand is how many cards he or she is drawing. And when you're last to act, you get to see all that information before you get to decide how you want to do. And when there's no cards to see, that's, you know, you need to have that information.
Yeah, especially like say you're holding a 10 and you're last to act and two guys draw or one guy draws. You know you're a favorite now. And so you don't have to draw. But if two guys stay pat and you have a 10, now you can throw away and go for that 7. And there's so much information. And there are so many ways to, you know, to trick people, too, to make them think, oh, okay, this guy's going to draw. So they stay pat. Then you stay pat behind with like an 8-7, and you assured yourself to pop because they can't, you know, they can't draw again. So on the last draw. So there's a lot of things that you can do in position.
And your same example, if you have that 10 in your first act, you're going to have to break it.
Yep, exactly. Because so you don't know what they're doing behind you.
Exactly.
So it's a sweet position to be in, and that's really what should come into mind. Even if you have a pretty playable hand, but you're under the gun, you may want to fold it just because you're going to be out of position the rest of the way.
Absolutely.
So, all right, my second one, since I started with the deuce as the most important one, I'm going to move on to the 6, which is the most lethal card that you would want to see in your hand, because it makes making good hands, making smooth hands, or making 7 so much more difficult, because it makes you it straights all the time. 6 is such a trouble card.
It's like the wolf of the sheep's clothing. It looks good. When you dig in,
yeah.
It's really evil.
Yeah, okay.
No?
Yeah, that's good.
Bad reference?
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
But your stating the obvious is clearly better than your analogies. So, anyway, but really, it's if you're going to play the 6, just be careful, because it really can lead to straights. And the dilemma two people have is when they have a 7-6, 5-4-3, and they have the straight already, what do you do then? You throw away the 7, or you throw away the 6? Usually you throw, because now you've already got yourself in trouble because you're playing without the deuce in your hand.
Right,
so clearly, I think the best move there is probably to throw away the 7 and hope you hit an 8 to make an 8-6, because if you throw away the 6, you're trying to hit one exact card. So just avoid the 6 altogether if you can, unless you're in the blinds, really.
All right, my second tip, continuing on with my Master of the Obvious. If you have to draw 3 cards and you're not checking your big blind, you should be folding.
Yes. Yes.
But, you know, people are new to these draw games, and, you know, if you get, like, you know, in 5-card draw, I mean, you'll throw 3 away a lot if you have a good pair. But in deuce 7, even in deuce 7.
Yeah, because they're still totally different games.
Yeah.
Regular 5-card draw, all you need is one card to improve your hand, or you can make two pair or something. But in this game, one more low card isn't going to help your hand. You know what I mean?
And
you're
even
still
drawing
screwed.
2 is a dangerous proposition a lot of times, unless you're in position.
Sure. Dan Negreanu's chapter talks a lot about that, where, you know, if you're going to play a 3-card hand, it better be, and then he goes into like 2-3-5, 2-3-4, 2-3-7, you know, whatever. And there's a lot more hands up. But, and it's also, too, I'm not saying, like, when you say 6, I'm not saying, oh, there's a 6 in my hand, throw it away.
Right.
You know, you could have a 2-3-5-6-8 and stay pat, or a 3-5-6. You know, or 2-5-6 or something. You know, you're going to play the hand, but just be careful with it. That's all. Right? That's what we're saying today.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, my last one is never break an 8-6 or an 8-5. Clearly, if you're listening to these tips and taking them to heart, then you're not an advanced player in deuces 7, and neither are we. But the rule is that if you make an 8-6 or an 8-5, they're just way too much of a favorite to fool with. If you dealt an 8-6 or an 8-5, You better stand pat with it. Don't ever think about throwing away the 8 and trying to make a 7. You know, and the only way that you would ever consider breaking it is if you get to the level where you know your players around you. You've been playing with them for years, and you know that if they're pat, that they're half pat with a 7 in that position kind of thing. Then you maybe desperation throw away the 8. But if you're playing in our tournament and you're dealt an 8-5 or an 8-6, or you make an 8-5 or an 8-6, stay pat and hold on for dear life. Right?
Absolutely.
All right.
All right, my final tip, bluff sometimes.
Yeah.
Bluffing is always a very important part of all poker. But,
unless you're playing Dr. Frank Toscano.
Very good point. But there's some very unique kind of bluffing opportunities that come up in deuce to 7 because of the cards not being exposed. So, you know, a nice well-timed bluff is going to win the hand outright sometimes. Or, you got to keep in mind, might force a stronger hand to break that hand, in which case you'll win that way.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you had a lot of deuces and sevens in your hand along the way, and it's getting to the last draw, and you know you've thrown away a couple of deuces, and you know you've thrown away a couple of sevens. These are cards that they can't make their hand, so they can't be too confident in their hand. So that's a perfect opportunity to bluff. Or they call it snowing, where if you have them all in your hand at the beginning, you don't draw at all, and you just stay pat the whole way. So,
but even if you have a middling hand, there's some opportunities. And here's one example we'll close with. You know, let's say you draw one and your opponent stands pat. Now, even if you don't improve, you might want to consider standing pat on the next draw, because now that's going to put doubt in your opponent's hand whether his or her hand is strong enough to hold up, and he may break it on the next one, and if he doesn't improve, then you've just won the pot.
How did you do in the Deuce of Seven portion last night?
I actually did very well, which is rare for me. I'm not a very good Deuce of Seven. But,
sweet.
But, of course, I was getting 4-card, 7 or low dealt to me, and even a Poker Stars monkey can win those hands.
All right, well, I look forward to it again. The free roll is the 27th at 9 o'clock, 27th of May, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, and it's on PokerStars.
Registration starts 4 hours beforehand.
Yep, and you can go to our website, antiupmagazine.com/apes, A-I-P-S, for all the details. And then the main event is June 10th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, $10 plus one. But if you get a free seat, then you don't have to pay. And that means you've cashed, and that means you won the bet with Scott.
Hi, this is Team Poker Stars Pro Vanessa Russo, and you are listening to the Ante Up PokerCast. You gotta fight for your right
to play. All right, no more micro limits for the hand of the week. At least for 1 week.
Then I can't do anything. I have to just sit here and let you read it. I don't play these limits, so I don't know how I'm going to... How can I judge Lauren when I can't play at the levels he plays at?
That's right. This hand of the week comes from our longtime listener, good friend Lauren Finkelstein, all the way from New York City.
Manhattan.
Where he recently modeled on the Today Show.
Yes.
I think we talked about that, right?
Yes. Was he a hand model like George Costanza?
No, he was modeling like suits.
Ah.
Or sports coats or stuff like that.
I think he wore a suit to the home game once.
Really?
I think so.
Well, he's a man of impeccable taste.
Absolutely.
And a very nice bankroll.
He's got a nice little pinky ring, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool. All right, so he's playing a live cash game. $5, $5, no limit with a required straddle of 10. And we're talking dollars here.
Required straddle, I love that.
Talking dollars here, not nickels. All right, so... Yeah, you know, isn't that some of these home games? I mean, they make a play bigger. You know, I don't know what they just to make it 5-10.
Yeah, or you know, 5-5-10.
But I guess you're getting the extra money in by required straddle.
Yeah, that's awesome.
All right, so it's 5-5 with a required straddle, $10. Of course, it's a very loose game.
Of course.
See, now Lauren's on my team, and they stating the obvious. You got a required straddle, $10. This is the loosest game you're going to find. It says preflop raises usually between $55 and $100. And we'll almost always get called in 3 or 4 places.
Oh, that's so insane.
It's kind of like a no-limit fold'em game here in Florida, but, you know, with a car on the table.
does he say how much they buy in for, by any chance?
He did. He said he buy in for the max of $1,000.
He buy in? Isn't that our vice president?
Oh, very nice. He bought in for the
for
max
1K.
Of $1,000.
Okay.
He had tripled up, so he's sitting in front of $4,500, holding his cards down.
Wow, that's more than tripling up, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you
know, that's a lot.
A couple other pots,
that's a lot of money.
Only one other player at the table has as deep a stack as he does. Everyone else is about 2,000 to 2,500.
Okay.
Whew, man. I'm scared already.
Man, that's like a whole bank, not a bank roll. That's incredible, man. That's huge.
All right, and our good friend Lauren is in the small blind for this hand. A few limpers for the $10 straddle. Gets around to him in the small blind, and he looks down at ace, queen, offsuit.
I knew he always has a hand with a queen in it. There's always a queen in his hand, and he always ends up like flopping Broadway, but then he's worried. I don't even know where his hand's going, but he always has ace, queen. How many times do I got to tell you? Don't go broke with a queen in your hand, Lauren. How's that?
All right.
That's about all I got to offer this week.
All right, so you're going to fold here then.
No. but I don't know what I'm going to do. I know if I'm going to get called in a bunch of places and I'm going to be out of position, I may just limp.
See, you get, you know, I like to limp a lot, but this is a situation where I think you almost have to limp, don't you?
I think so. You're going to get called in 3 or 4 spots
called,
and you're out of position.
You're
the whole
out of position,
way.
The worst position. Just
small blind.
Take a flyer and see whether you flop big.
Yeah,
right?
See if you flop Broadway again. Right?
Yeah.
You know, that's what I would not raise here because I'm going to get called by a bunch of guys, and clearly this is a very good game, and it's a loose game.
Yeah. You're not going to be able to find first. Anybody's hands.
No. So I'm just going to call the $5.
All right. We obviously don't play at these stakes because Lauren juices it to 80. four callers, including the other big stack, $400.
Oh, my God. So 320 plus a couple of blinds. Yeah. So you're looking at like a $350 pot here.
There's a 400 pot's what he says. Right?
Yeah, okay.
So, but, you know, here's the thing. We don't know. All we've really done with this raise, I think, and, you know, I'm a no-limit dog.
Is just built the pot.
Is built a pot and made people kind of like stare at us and think that we have a hand that they should be scared of. We have no idea what anybody else is holding.
Oh, man. And they're licking their chops because you've got 4,500 in front of you, and they're hoping to double up playing 7-8 or something like that.
Very nice.
You watch.
All right. Flop comes ace, king, jack, two diamonds. And remember, we have the ace, queen, and our ace is of the diamond flavor.
Well, we like this flop, but with that many callers, it's conceivable somebody has your favorite hand, queen 10, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or ace jack or ace king. Although, I guess they would raise with ace king in this game. Ace jack, maybe not. But I could see somebody limping with queen 10 and then calling a raise after it gets to them and five other guys called or whatever.
Yeah.
Scary. Pretty scary. But we're going to have to put a bet out there.
All right. So here's what Lauren's thinking. He says a bet here is likely to get called or re-raised by somebody testing him. I can see that happening.
Yes.
So he's thinking a check raise will represent more strength and have a better chance of taking down the pot. What do you think?
I think that's a good move. Only because he's got to be confident that someone's going to bet, though. And hope to dear God that they don't have queen 10.
All right, well, here this is one of those situations where I don't really... It's a little less worrisome if no one bets, right? Because we got top pair. We have the gut shot, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that free card might actually help us and make our decision a little easier.
Yeah, it's just that there's two diamonds out there, and I realize we got the ace of diamonds, but you don't want to give someone with, you know, king, you know, or whatever it is.
Right. Yeah,
I guess the king is a diamond. So I guess you don't want somebody with two diamonds in their hand getting a free card either to steal this from you. So I like the check raise, but only if I know someone's betting out.
All right.
If I feel like these guys, and it is pretty loose, so they probably are, so it's probably a good play.
Yeah. All right, so Lauren checks. The other big stack of the table makes what he calls a ridiculously small bet of
$20. $20? The straddle required is 10. I mean,
yeah, I wonder if he was colorblind and didn't realize the chip colors from the costume. But $20, it's min raised to 40 by the button. See, this is the only reason I want to be in this game. I just actually want to watch this game. I don't want to actually be in it.
Wow, so now we're going for the check raise, and it's 40 to us, and we have the big stack in the hand, putting out 20, looking to make some money, so it's pretty scary. What's he going to make it, 250 to go? I bet he makes it like 200 or 250 to go.
All right, how about $100?
That's it?
Yeah.
It's a 400, now it's a $460 pot or whatever, $60 pot. Wow, that's pretty weak, too. Weak, Lauren, weak. You got 4,500 in front of you. Bet three-quarters of the pot.
All right, this is what he's thinking. He says if he gets re-raised, he'll feel pretty confident he's beaten get away for a small investment.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm just called, he's probably up against a flush draw and then can make a decision of how to proceed on the turn. Interesting thinking.
Yeah, but I just think that somebody who has a flush draw probably feels like with implied odds they're going to have enough money to call there, so... I would want to at least make him punish him for calling. You know, I don't feel like that's enough money. $100 not enough.
Hmm.
He raised to 80 preflop, and now there's a pot.
Yeah, maybe what he's saying would work too with $200 as a bet.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. All right.
Still
well,
a small portion of his bank.
Yeah, I would bet between 200 and 300, I think, if I'm playing in this game, and that's what I would have done, especially when you're going for the check raise. Usually, the check raise is pretty significant. It's not $60 more raise,
right.
You know. So, I don't know.
Re-raise.
But a check re-raise. but I don't know. I don't agree with the amount, but I like the play.
Okay. The initial bettor just calls, and the button folds. So the little min-raise guy got cute and ran away.
All right, so now you're just ahead of us up with this big stack.
That's right.
It's kind of scary.
Yep. Pot 640. Turn is an offsuit 10.
Okay, well, we got the nuts.
Broadway. Aren't you going to say it that, you know, he's going to get Broadway?
Yes.
So that's what you always say he does?
Well, I mean, he always gets Broadway with ace queen. And then he's always put to a big decision on the end because something happens like a diamond comes out or a board pair. So But he always ends up having Broadway and being put to a tough decision. And I guess he always gets Broadway because he's in New York. I don't know. Maybe that's it.
Very nice.
But, all right, well, now we're going to bet strong here because we really don't want somebody sticking around with two diamonds in their hand, you know, and one of those diamonds could be the queen of diamonds, you know. So you don't. So they were the same in the free rolling on you is what I'm trying to get across there.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that we're going to have to take a pretty big bet here, and I'd bet like 500 here.
Okay, Lauren bets 400.
All right, that's not too bad.
About two-thirds of the pot, not bad.
Yeah, yeah.
He's because he obviously wants to make him pay for his flush draw. That's what he has. And guess what? Our opponent moves all in.
I think he sent this hand in before. I remember this hand. I could have sworn he sent this hand in before. And then the guy has the same hand as him, I think. That's what I'm guessing. So I'm calling.
All right, but it's 4,000 more to call.
Yeah, I know.
4,000, all right.
4,000. But we got the nuts, and I realized
that's 40 that. Cents. 40,000. I think 4,000.
He's 40,000.
See, I just made the game even bigger than it was.
I have a feeling he's going to say, okay, I have the nuts, but I think he has the same nuts as me, but he might be free rolling with two diamonds in his hand, with a queen of diamonds. That's what I think he's going to say, because I think we've heard this hand before somehow. But what did he do?
All right, well, before we get to that, he poses one more question for us.
All right.
An extra wrinkle to this hand.
All right.
He says he bought into the we bought into the game for 8% of our entire bankroll, and because of the money that we made, the money in front of us is now 25% of our bankroll. Does that affect your decision?
I'm convinced that we've heard this hand before because this is before we were talking about the bankroll problems about how much you remember we were talking about getting up and leaving because it affects your bankroll and everything. I think this is a hand before, but doesn't affect my decision. I'm at this point I'm playing in the game and I'm in the hand, so I got to do what's best for me, and at this point, I have the nuts, so I'm calling.
All right, well, of course, he realizes he has the current nuts with one come. He said that he thought his opponent was almost surely free-rolling against him, which is what you said.
Yeah.
But he just couldn't bring himself to fold, so he calls, and his opponent turns over. Queen seven of diamonds.
See, I knew this hand. Either that or I'm just freaking psychic, because I could see it, like, in my mind's eye, you know?
So we have to sweat one more card, and of course we
chop.
No, we win.
We chop. The guy has the same straight as us. He's free rolling.
Yeah,
we chop.
We win. So.
Oh, I know, but we chop is what I said. Chop. You said no, we win. No, we chop.
We don't lose.
I know, but we chop. I didn't say we lose. I said we chop. No diamond comes on the end. They both have Broadway, and they chop.
All right. So anyhow, he does the math and says he called 4,000 with an 88% chance of winning 700, half the pot, and a 12% chance of losing it all. He says mathematically he thinks it's a correct call, but if I were to do it again, he would fold that sucker.
Yeah. Yeah, I think... Yeah, I think we need to do a better job with the hands of the week. Because I'm fairly certain we've done this hand before. But we wanted to stick it to Dave from Harrisburg.
Yes, there we go.
There's your hand of the week with a lot of money, buddy. Oh, that's classic. Well, Lauren, we would spin the wheel for you, but it's not here.
No, no. And since we probably already gave you some swag, we'll just root around and see whether we can find a card protector from PokerFaces.tv or something like that to send a man of your modeling stature.
All right. Well, good luck in Apes, everyone, and another good show. Scott, glad to have you back from Chicago.
Thank you. And hopefully Mike the Mouth Mattiso next week.
Yep, absolutely. I am Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We will see you at the tables. Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
And then of course we
chop.
No.